everybody. This is Eric Warrior, and welcome to NetworkMarketingPro.com. I am here with a very special guest. This gentleman, I first came to know him because he was a contributing author or a writer for Success Magazine talking about network marketing, the first kind of mass publication that was talking positively about network marketing. And I was just so, I looked forward to it every month when I would get it. Not only is he an incredible author, he's written Your First Year in Network Marketing, Your Best Year in Network Marketing, plus a number of other books, I'm sure. But he's also earned over $30 million in commissions over the course of his career. He not only talks about our profession, but he goes out and leads by example in our profession. And I'm very pleased to be able to introduce to all of you Mr. Mark Yarnell.
Thanks, Eric. Good to be here.
How are you?
Appreciate you having me.
It's my pleasure for sure. I'm so glad we were able to make this work. Mr. Yarnell.
Mark.
Okay. I have so much respect for what you've done for our profession to be able to kind of take it into the mainstream. How did that all happen, this whole process of getting connected with Success Magazine and the writing aspect of your business? What happened there?
Just got lucky. I got a phone call from Scott DeGarmo, who at the time was editor-publisher of Success in New York, and I think he had read one of my early books, Power Speaking, and kind of liked my writing style, and he had the idea that it was time to take network marketing a little more mainstream. He was kind of querying me as to whether I'd consider being contributing editor, and I jumped all over it, because I saw it as an opportunity. First of all, for shameless self-promotion, and secondarily, because I saw it as an opportunity to really truthfully elevate the industry. As you said, we didn't have any real good representation at the time, so I jumped all over that, and I think the most exciting thing for me was it was a process of interviewing the wealthiest people at the time, which is kind of what he wanted me to do. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a profile process of specific companies. It was more of a, you fly around and talk with the Bill Britts and the Dexter Yeagers and the great people, and then bring back to us the strategies that they use. And then we can really inform our readers as to how the people make the big money. So that's what I did for a couple of years. It was a wonderful opportunity.
Well, it's funny is because it's similar to what we're doing here.
Yes.
Network Marketing Pro, we're just trying to grab the smartest, brightest people, but because of technology, they can actually look you in the eye. They can see what you're doing, and can get to know you a little bit, and then look for the common denominators. We build up a library. They can go look at it anytime they want. What do you think? I mean, there's so many people, 67 million people, they say, are involved in direct sales and network marketing around the world today, according to the DSA. And then there are some that are the super elite, like yourself and many like you, that have done, you know, what everybody wants. And then there's people who have had zero results, and there's people everywhere in between. From all of your conversations with those people, plus your personal experience, what's the difference maker? If you could try and describe what makes a difference between a rock star, a superstar, and somebody who's just kind of grinding it out.
I think my philosophy is considerably different in the sense that I distill it all down to one thing, and that's mentoring. For me, people ask me all the time that question, how did you make that much money? And I think one of the misperceptions is that somebody like me has made a whole lot of money. You know, I know you talked with Nathan. Mm-hmm. Nathan's earned probably twice what I have in the same company. He was in New Skin, as was I. In the early days before I retired, I met people that have made 10 times what I've made. So the supposition that some of us are at a real high level is flattering, but the truth is the people at the highest ranks of our industry in this domain are making so much more than most people dream. And it's because of mentoring.
Mentoring.
People always ask me, how did you do it? I have been so blessed over the years with three very important mentors. And what I've discovered is a mentor is somebody who consistently demonstrates what's possible. If they've done it and you can get to them, which you can, real leaders, they're very accessible, I've discovered. This is one of my secrets. I found I can pick up the phone and call anybody, virtually anybody. If they're a real sincere leader, they're highly accessible. You find somebody in your domain that is demonstrating currently, what's possible, and then you have them coach you, and then you just shut up and listen. And that was the key to my success.
Really?
Yeah. I had great mentors. And so by design, I always made it a point to go out. You know, my first mentor when I was in theology was Dr. Norman Vincent Peale.
Well, it's a good mentor.
Yeah, I met him at a Positive Thinking rally in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I had an hour with him and his wife. And he gave me five principles on how to build a large church. At the time, I was pastor of a small church in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I went out and I did exactly what he said, and I built a huge church. And then I found Richard Call, who had written a book called The First Million is the Easiest. When I decided on the domain of network marketing, largely because there was no ceiling. Cap on earnings.
Mm-hmm.
I found Richard. Richard was earning $100,000 a month at the time. I said, "Will you coach me?" He said, "Of course." He coached me. I just shut up. I did exactly what he told me. So at all these different stages along the way, I'd like to be able to say, gee, you know, it was just this inherent potential my parents gave me through DNA, or I had a great education, or, you know, I'd like to come up with all these wonderful ideas that defend, rationalize, and justify my success, but it can really be distilled down to one thing. I know how to pick a mentor, and then I just shut up and listen.
So you're picking a mentor. Now, here, the people who are watching and going, how do I pick a mentor? How do I find somebody who will be like that Norman Vincent Peale or that, you know, Mr. Call or whatever. You know, part of the reason for this program is these guys, through technology, can be mentors for you. You can listen to what they have to say if you don't happen to have a superstar accessible to you at the moment. But what would you suggest to them to, how do they do that? Because, I mean, millions of people are, you know, want that same thing.
Well, I doubt that anybody watching this right now is not part of a corporation with a superstar at the helm. And one of the ways you can determine if a person's a good mentor is accessibility. I think, unfortunately, in a lot of fields, and you know this, Eric, I mean, this is no secret, some people suffer from viral legenditis. That's an inflammation of the head brought on by undue edification.
Yes.
And those are people that are not accessible anymore.
Right.
Most people watching this are in a company where if they track upline high enough, they'll find somebody making what they want to earn, and then they've just got to pick up the phone and call.
So when they pick up the phone and call them, how do they prove or sign a kind of showcase to that person that they're worth the time? How do you know if you were in my upline and I was calling, and I finally get a hold of you? How do I demonstrate to you that I am worth an investment of mentorship?
Well, you're going to demonstrate it over a period of time. Initially, I'm going to have to take your word for it, but I'm going to ask you certain questions. I'm going to want to know, for example, that you're literally willing to do what I teach you for 1 year and put on blinders, that you're literally willing to not even contemplate another company. For at least a year, and that you will not argue or try to take what I teach you and modify it in any way. And if the answer to those questions is, yes, Mark, I will do those things, I'm going to make the assumption that you will.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll know within 90 days if you're telling me the truth.
Right.
But great leaders are generally accessible, and most companies have great leaders. The thing most people don't understand, Eric, and it seems so patently obvious to me, once you've selected a domain, for example, my first domain was theology. Who better to coach you than Doc Peale? Hmm. You know, Doc Peale said, you need a book. So I went out and wrote a book. It was my first book. Because Dr. Norman Vincent Peale said, there are two kinds of people in the world, and I'll never forget him saying this, people with a book and people without one. The way he talked real great, he said, you want to get in the first group, they make all the money.
Hmm.
So I went and found a mentor who was an author named Kevin McCallman. He'd written for Reader's Digest, and he and I wrote the book together, and we split the commissions and everything. But I learned from him as a mentor, a writer. So I wrote a book. I did what Peale told me. If people pick a domain, and let's say the domain is network marketing, what they have to realize is it's not about wasting your time in due diligence. A great leader doesn't pick a lousy company with crappy products and a poor comp plan at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
So once you understand the power of selecting somebody who is consistently demonstrating what's possible, all you've got to do is go find them. They're going to be in a great company. Now, the only caveat to that is if you track upline and find that you can't get access to people who could benefit from you economically, which is irrational,
right?
That's a problem. So when people call me, and I get a lot of calls from people who will say, you know, they'll ask me, well, which company should I pick, blah, blah. I say, well, don't quit companies, just track upline, find a mentor.
Right.
There's somebody in your upline who's accessible. Find out who's making the amount of money you want to make. Call them. Go do what they tell you. Promise to do what they tell you.
So let's let me try this exercise, okay?
Okay.
Let's assume that you are going to be a mentor for everybody watching this show. Let's say they tracked you down, they called you up, and they said, Mr. Yarnell, I know I'm smart, would you mentor me? And then you ask the questions. You know, are you willing to not argue with me? Are you going to do it for 1 year and you're not going to consider anything else? And they say, yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. What would be some of the things that you would coach them to do? And, you know, mentoring thing, what I've learned from mentoring, it's not a daily interaction. Usually it's given an assignment, it's coaching, mm-hmm. it's guiding, it's maybe once a month or something, you touch base and you make sure they're on track.
Right.
It's not, you know, they don't move into your house with you. You know, mentors typically don't. Right. One of my best mentors was Jim Rohn, and, you know, we right. became friends, but it was...
And what a great guy.
Amazing guy. Amazing.
He was accessible.
He was accessible, absolutely. So, what would you say to these people who would be looking to you as a mentor? What would be some of the things that you would do?
Well, the first thing I would teach him to do is turn professional. You know, it's amazing. The last year Tiger Woods was an amateur, he didn't make any money. The first year he turned pro, he made $18 million. Now, he played the same number of tournaments.
Right.
And he, you know, went to the driving range and practiced the same amount of time, which is about 2 hours a day, 9 months a year, if you add up all the cumulative time that he plays golf. Mm-hmm. 2 hours a day, mm-hmm. 9 months a year. In tournament play. So he goes from zero to $18 million. What was the difference? He turned pro. In our industry, so many people have lost sight of the fact that amateurs, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way, an amateur is somebody who doesn't get paid, mm-hmm. and a professional is somebody who does.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing you're going to have to do as my new student, if I'm going to be your mentor, is you're going to have to commit to turning pro 2 hours a day. You're going to be the Tiger Woods of your company. That means you're going to have to do what your company pays you to do. Now, your company only pays you to do two things, recruit and retail. It doesn't pay you to watch Dr. Phil or walk the dog or surf or tweet or Twitter or all the technology going. You're paid to talk to another human being and either sell them your product or service or recruit them into the business. So the first thing I'm going to commit you to as a person who's willing to follow my strategy is 2 hours a day. Where during that 2 hours you turn off all of your technology, all of it, except either your one cell phone or a landline. And during that time, you're basically going to see if you can reach 30 people and talk to them about your product, service, or preferably the business opportunity. I think that's where it is. So you're going to have to commit, first of all, to 2 hours a day. And if you can't do that, I will not sponsor you, and I will not work with you. Because we're only paid as professionals in this industry to recruit and retail. I talk to people all the time who are figuring out new back office drip systems, you know, or they're going to this seminar or that symposium or this or that. I think I love personal development. I love technology. I've probably got as many website domains as anybody in the networking industry. I use it from a video perspective. Technology is a fabulous, fabulous tool. But by golly, 2 hours a day, you need to recruit and retail with other human beings interacting.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no substitute to that. So that's kind of the first thing. And Good. You'd be surprised how few people understand that.
Or will commit to that discipline.
Yeah, or will commit to it.
All right.
Now, they'll commit to it.
Yep.
They just won't do it.
Right. All right, so let's say that they agree that they're going to do that. Then, you know, what would be another step that you would take them into?
I'm going to make sure that they understand that they not bring up during... There are several steps that I believe are inherent in the process of doing our business professionally. I think, first of all, there's expose, then present, then validate, then enroll, then support. And by that I mean, first thing you've got to do is expose people in some way to the business. Without, and this is a really important caveat, without stating terminology that will raise automatic stereotypical biases against our industry, which most people have. You're right, 67 million people worldwide. Mm-hmm. People have formulated an opinion of our industry, good or bad, you know. Mm-hmm. And so if during the exposure step when we're trying to recruit people, if we use terms that that bring up these red flags, these stereotypical biases, which we all have, we'll never get them to phase two, which is the presentation. So the first thing I teach people is, in a very limited way, you want to tweak the excitement or interest level of people with facts that won't elicit these stereotypical biases. And you know, a lot of people don't realize this, but there was a 3 months ago an article in Scientific American Mind that was unbelievable. It was why human beings are biased, why human beings are prejudiced.
Yes.
And Jesse Jackson said something that I thought was extremely courageous. He said, you know, they were interviewing him, asking him about, are you prejudiced? He said, you know, if I'm in a strange town and it's after dark, and I'm walking down a side street and I hear footsteps behind me and I turn around and look and I see a white face, I'm relieved. Hmm. He said, that's embarrassing for me as a civil rights advocate at my stage of my career.
Yeah.
But he said, to pretend that I don't myself have inherent biases and stereotypical beliefs would be a fraud. That's the way people are about network marketing. We all have these inherent biases. So during the exposure step, what I teach you is let's spend 2 hours exposing as many people as possible to points of interest that do not embody terminology that's going to bring up those inherent biases. Excuse me, if you could earn an extra $500 a week from a home business, or have you ever considered a business where you could create passive residual income at home? These are all terms that people, that bring up these immediate red flags.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you, and they might be nice to you and say, oh, gee, Eric, that sounds great, tell me more, you know, but they're not going with it. Because they search, their brain instantaneously searches through these archives of negative imagery about our industry. And then they never, you never get them to the presentation stage.
Mm-hmm.
If, on the other hand, I say to you, In our preliminary meet, when we first meet, if I say, you know, I just got to ask you something. How many units of principal's interest have you accumulated? Principal's interest. Yeah, how many units do you and your family have you accumulated over the years? Now, I'm talking about units that are tied to a proprietary funding vehicle with non-sequential disbursements.
I don't understand anything that you just said.
Well, but I mean, do you have...
Because I'm an amateur when it comes to all that
how
stuff.
How many units do you have? I mean, do you have any units tucked away? No. In fact, most people will say, what's a unit?
Right. Yeah, that's what I would say.
Yeah, exactly. And I said, what's a unit? $10,000. So, like, if you needed 3 units, you'd need $30,000 a month. So, you know, I tell you what, you obviously don't know about this yet, about proprietary funding vehicles. Go check out this website, or I'd hand them a CD.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to this and it'll give you a little bit of an understanding about emergency retirement planning, and then call me if you're interested. Now you're going to go away, and I don't care how bright you are, and I don't care your field, your profession, your educational background, your head's spinning. But I haven't created any kind, all I've taken is synonyms out of a thesaurus and described network marketing in a way that you've never heard, because I can circumnavigate your inherent biases. Hmm. You're going to listen to that. What's this crazy nut talking about? Now, if the tool that I give you, whether it's a CD, a 10-minute CD, I recently did one called Clap If You Believe in Fairies. And the whole premise was, when we were kids, we saw Peter Pan, and there was a magic moment in the movie when the offstage guy said, oh my goodness, Tinkerbell's light's dimming. Boys and girls, clap if you believe in fairies and we'll save her life. And we all clap. Now, we were second graders, but we know it was bull. But we saved Tinkerbell's life. And so the point of this message, without getting into network marketing, is saying, you know, we're adults now, but the offstage voice is saying, clap if you believe in retirement. Clap if you believe in 401ks. Clap if you believe in Wall Street. So when I give you that CD and you listen to it, I'm going to tweak your imagination even more. But you're never going to hear a word about passive residual income, about network marketing, none of that. Because I want to get you to the presentation. And if I tip you off in the exposure step, you're never coming back. So the first thing I'm going to teach you as a new person, once you're committed to working 2 hours a day, is how to work those 2 hours. And the way that you want to work those 2 hours is professionally engaged in reaching as many people as you can with information that will interest them, not turn them off. And if I can get a person to do that 2 hours a day, you pick, you're either going to talk to 10, 20, or 30 people a day, and in a year, you're wealthy if you're consistently resilient doing that. So that would be the first advice I give people.
All right, so let's say you got somebody and they do that for a month, and then they call you and they say, Mark, it's hard, and people are doing this. They start giving you the list of limiting beliefs.
I say, well, of course it is. Why do you think we make so much money?
Yeah.
I mean, of course it's hard. It's horrible, and it's going to get worse. In about another 2 months, you're going to be so sick of the same spiel, but it's still going to be repetition. You're going to be saying the same thing. It's going to be boring. It's going to stink. There are going to be people quit. You bet it's hard. It's miserable. It's rotten. That's why you're going to make $300,000 a month if you do what I teach you.
Mm.
You know, the reward, whenever anything is challenging and difficult, the people who make the most money are those with the courage to face it. Mm-hmm. This is not an easy industry. And so these people that are pretending, oh, you know, get in now, take a power position, do this, do that, this is easy, you're rich in a year, that's all a fraud.
Mm.
Hardest work I've ever done.
Yeah.
And then when you get good at it, it may become some of the most boring work because it's all repetition. The same thing over and over. So I sometimes feel that I have to get people back focused on the truth. And the truth is, yes, you're paying the price now. Yes, it's difficult. And one of the analogies I use, Eric, that makes a lot of sense to people is I say, you know, I went to school with a guy who went 7 years after me and became an eye surgeon. He worked, I dropped out of college. He went 7 years, counting residency, internship, to earn in a year what I make in a month. But if Philip would have gone to medical school and would have sat in the first 30 days of the first year and raised his hand and said, can we cut on some eyes now?
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm bored. The professors would look at him like he's lost his mind. So if he's willing to put 7 years in before he ever makes money or does anything, to earn in a year what I make in a month, I've got to be willing to pay the sacrifice and face the difficulty. And yes, it is hard.
Yeah. Here's what I tell people, and tell me if you think this is right, or if it's close, or if you have a difference of opinion. I say it takes about 1 year of focused energy to become functional and profitable at some level.
Mm-hmm.
It takes about 3 years to become highly functional, where a position where you could probably go full-time. Takes about 5 years of dedicated, focused energy to master it, to become a master at this. You know, Malcolm Gladwell talks in the book Outliers. The one concept out of the book was 10,000 hours it takes to become world-class.
Mm-hmm.
10,000 hours is 3 hours a day for 10 years, or 6 hours a day for 5 years. But that's what it's going to take to become world-class. So 1, 3, and 5 years for kind of functional, profitable, highly profitable, or highly functional, and world class. Do you think that path is about right? Would you adjust it one way or the other?
No, absolutely. The way you're breaking it down makes perfect sense to me.
Okay.
I think you can do it a little faster if you're willing to work harder.
Again, sure.
What you're talking about is committed effort over an extended period of time.
Mm-hmm.
When I first read Outliers, I thought, you know, this is almost an apologensia for Blink. Because in the early days of his career, Malcolm was talking about how, you know, we can make these split-second intuitive decisions, and then he's got this book, 10,000 Hours, as you say. I think your analysis is absolutely bang on.
Okay.
Because even if they do better, all that's going to do is crank them up and get them excited. What you're giving them is an accurate, realistic portrayal of what it requires to become an expert, and it's time.
And they might their income might spike, mm-hmm. but it's hard for their experience to match their income.
That's right.
And ladies and gentlemen, I apologize for all this coughing. I got an allergy thing going on, so and bear with me. But their income might spike. You know, they might be at the right place at the right time. All of a sudden, everything takes off. But they have to quickly work harder to get their experience up to their income, or their income's going to drop.
That's right.
I mean, you see it over and over and over and over. talk to me about our economy, our global economy, and the network marketing profession around the world. What's the next frontier for us? What's the next big play for the network marketing profession? What do you see in the horizon? You know, because I know you told me before we started that hey, you're back building because you got a little bored.
Yeah.
But what's you have an amazing view of our profession and of the world from the network marketing perspective. What's your view? What do you see?
Well, it's the last bastion of free enterprise. It's the only, in my opinion, ethical, character driven, authentic entrepreneurial venture on planet Earth. But I've always believed that. It's just that in perfect storm times, like right now, what happens is the great companies, like Amway, you know, a lot of people say, oh, Amway, well, wait a minute, they did $8.7 billion last year, and they're projecting, I don't know if you've noticed all their TV commercials.
Yeah, I'm glad they're finally saying that they're Amway.
Yeah, they're doing a great job because they're smart enough to know, and I've talked to some of the Amway higher-ups who say, oh, yeah, we're going to keep advertising till 2012. Their goal is to get to $10 billion pretty fast, and I think they will.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what happens is when this kind of global economic situation happens, all of a sudden, more and more of the exit strategies are cut off. And when those exit strategies are severed, that only leaves a certain number of fighters standing. So the legitimate network marketing companies are in an ideal position to capitalize on that. And I don't think it'll ever reverse. I think that what's going to happen is we're going to have about a five-year window here before, and you know everything's cyclical. We know that, Eric. I mean, people are going to get excited and say, oh, we're back. Everything's going to be wonderful. But we've got a five-year window here where there are literally no options. What are you going to do? 401? You going to put it in mutual funds?
There's a lot of people going back to work.
Absolutely.
A lot of people who had paper wealth going back to work because they didn't have a choice.
That's right.
A lot of people thought they had a great retirement pension plan, you know, a great career, whatever, and their companies, you know.
Oh, yeah.
They got to look at different things.
It's the perfect time because there are no options.
Hmm.
What else are people going to do?
Right.
Real estate? No, I don't think so. Wall Street, all Wall Street has always been, in my opinion, this is the reason I've never done blue chip stocks, is basically just casino capitalism. And I started thinking one day, wait a minute, if this guy can make money whether it goes down or up, if he bets right and he controls over $4 billion of investment capital, how can I compete with him? I don't know whether he's going to want it to go up or down today.
Right.
So I'm not playing casino capitalism. I want a business where I can work very hard, invest my time, and have no cap. That's the other thing I've never understood. If your goal is to make money, let's say your attainment objective is X, why would anybody get into a profession with a cap on earnings? I never got it. I mean, basically, when I figured out in network marketing, nobody could stop me. I said, wait a minute, what happens if I get to like $40,000 a month or $50,000 a month? Because in the old days, I couldn't even relate to that. You know, mm-hmm. A lot of people watching this will think, $5,000 a month, my life at work. I couldn't even relate. Well, you keep going. I said, but wait a minute, don't they stop you somewhere? No. So why would any entrepreneur with aspirations of wealth select a profession with a ceiling over one with no cap? I don't get it. To me, it's almost like the people who don't do network marketing are people who have duh outs. You know what a duh out is? That's when a seemingly rational adult is sitting all alone in the privacy of his own living room with nobody around, all of a sudden just stares back up into space and goes, duh, and drools on his sweater. Those are the only people that shouldn't get into network marketing.
Right.
If people don't do our industry, I wonder if maybe sometimes they have duh outs because there's no cap. And I don't mean that in a disparaging way. I just don't get it.
Right.
I don't see any other option, especially in tumultuous times.
Hmm.
I've offered over and over. You know, I did the O'Reilly Factor one day only because people said, Yarna, you're nuts to go into the no spin zone. This guy will tear you to shreds. No, he didn't. He was a great journalist because I didn't spin anything. He said, what do? I sell soap and shampoo. Well, that's a great, everybody uses that, don't they? He said, how do you do it? Well, I've just talked to a lot of people and they've, basically, I will go on any television program or any program like this anytime, and I will debate against the most educated academic from any field, including economics, resolved that network marketing is the best element of all elements of capitalism, resolved that network marketing is the only bastion of capitalism for thinking adults, and I will win that debate every time. You know what my problem is? Nobody will debate me.
Really?
No. I've offered to go on Larry King.
Right.
Now I'm a nobody. Why would he want me, you know, when you have people who sing? But the point I'm making is nobody wants to debate that. People want to put down our industry until somebody like me who's willing to challenge their insanity is willing to do it in a large domain. They won't touch me with a 10-foot pole because they know I'm right. The rest of it's just garbage. Network marketing, assuming you pick a legitimate company, is the only industry. Now, I believe that. The others are, in my opinion, stupid. Literally irrational. I told a friend of mine, I got really close to one of my close friends, a lawyer, Mr. I said, you know, the only problem with your profession is 99% of you lawyers give the other 1% a bad name. You know, but I said, you could transfer $1 billion to my checking account tomorrow. I'm not going into law, and I'm not going into medicine, and I'm not going, because I've got the best field in the world, and I'm that adamant about it. And so far, nobody will accept the challenge to debate me on that matter.
I think those times are changing. I'll bet you in the next 2 to 5 years, we're going to get a lot of people talking about our profession.
We are, and not derogatorily. What I'm saying is nobody from traditional capitalism will try to out-argue me when I say networking is the most credible, ethical, authentic profession. That's what I'm saying. I believe it is. And you're right, more people are going to be talking.
Yeah.
Largely because of process of elimination. What else are they going to do?
Yeah, times are changing.
Yes.
Big, big time.
Big time.
I love that. Well, here's one of my favorite questions. I'm a big fan of defining moments, right? You go through your career, you go through your life. There are these times, and I'm sure you've had dozens of them. I've had over a dozen of them. But there's a defining moment where something happens and it fundamentally changed you. You hit some obstacle, some barrier, something happened, and something changed forever inside your heart, inside your head. And I'm sure while I was just saying this, one popped into your mind, one defining moment in your career popped into your brain. What was that defining moment for you?
I was running off a cliff in a paraglider because I had a horrible fear of heights. And I was so astounded at the peripheral, the ancillary benefits of that phobia overcoming. Everything in my life began to change when I climbed, when I took paragliding lessons and I climbed up on the mountain and I ran off because I was so mortified by heights. And after I accomplished that, everything else started changing for me. And this was a long time ago. This was in the 70s. When they first came out with the sport. Interestingly enough, remember me telling you, mentors are accessible. I found out about this Dr. Albert Bandura at Stanford University, who's head of the psychology department. And he had written 10 PhD level textbooks, one called Self-Efficacy that I just love. I wanted him to mentor me. I wanted to understand what causes peak performance. So I called him at Stanford. He answered, got on the phone. I said, how much would you charge me for a day? I want to bring my wife and daughter over. I'm going to spend some quality time with you. He said, well, nobody's ever asked me that. I said, well, wait a minute. You're head of the psychology department. Here's a guy who has measured peak performance and analyzed in the laboratory of Stanford for 30 years. What differentiates billionaires from mediocre people? He knows at a deep academic level what these criteria are. So I wanted to learn. So he said, well, I don't know even a price to set. And I gave him a figure. He said, oh, that's more than generous. I said, great. When can we come? And he told me we went over there. Interestingly enough, one of his primary causes of greatness was overcoming phobias. And he learned it when he developed a therapeutic process for helping snake phobics. They'd come in and they'd be literally the kind of people that if they looked through a glass and saw a snake 100 feet away, they'd get cold sweats. A horrible phobia. Immobilized. He taught them a therapy that got them over their fear, and he made an interesting discovery. In subsequent interviews, when they would come back to for post-therapeutic follow-up, he'd say, "So, how are you doing with your, are you still over your, oh yeah, snakes don't scare me. Oh, and by the way, I joined Little Theater, and I'm running for Congress next year. And you know that bum I was married to? I kicked him out. Married by high." He said, what we learned was, in helping them overcome their biggest fear, which for them was snakes, the ancillary benefits were staggering. It changed their whole world. So I can honestly say to you, and I didn't know this at the time until I met Dr. Bender, but the defining moment for me was when I picked the number one fear, and most of us are born, I think, with a fear of heights. When I overcame that, everything changed. It was almost like, well, if I can do this, I can do that. So I tell people, especially young people all the time, isolate your biggest fear. Find yourself a person who's a professional in that domain who can help you overcome that fear and face it head on. Because if you can do that, you can run off a 7,008-foot mountain with a paraglider when you're afraid of heights. You will not be afraid for people to reject you when you prospect them. That domain will be no longer fear-inducing. You know? So for me, rejection, everybody hates rejection. I don't even care. But that was the defining moment. And I don't mean to kickstart my mouth, but that, if I could pass that one notion on to people all over the world, isolate your biggest fear and face it and overcome it and watch what happens to the rest of your life. It's scary. Scary.
In a good way.
In a positive way.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, it really works.
I love it. All right, well, this is going to be watched by tens of thousands of people. Already we're being watched in about 50 countries around the world. Okay, people are really excited about building their network marketing careers. If you were sitting down with these people in their homes and you had a few minutes to just look them in the eye and tell them something, what would you tell them?
I would say unequivocally, find a mentor in the domain in which you select. And let's make it simple, more specific. You're going to do network marketing. You're probably already in a company. Find a mentor, track upline, find somebody who is earning what, because the dangerous thing, people got to hear this, there are three kinds of mentors in networking. There's the person who is consistently demonstrating what's possible and is making it. There's the person who's honest and admitting they've never made it, but they'll teach you anyway if you buy their tapes. And then there's the person who says, I made this and they really didn't. Stay in your own company. I always try to get people to stay where they are. Every time you switch, it's, yeah, you're starting over. Track upline till you find somebody who's great. If you're not already in a company, find a mentor demonstrating what's possible, because great mentors do not pick lousy companies with bad comp plans and bad products. Focus for 1 year. Do not, I'll show you your mine if you'll show me yours. Don't be wasting your time looking at anything that will seduce you into pulling away from your own opportunity. Once you've made a decision, you've got to do 1-2 years of absolutely unbridled focus without any challenge of the seduction of being sucked away into another deal. That's the problem in our industry. People online, about the time they get ready to prospect the next person, boop, boop, a pop-up. You've got an opportunity to join right now, take a power leg if you sign. No, you've got to absolutely put on blinders to everything else. So the first thing I'm going to, if I'm sitting in a person's living room, I'm going to say, will you or will you not commit to 1 to 2 years of unbridled effort where you put on blinders? Because if you won't, I literally can't help you. And then treat it like a numbers game. My first mentor, Richard Call, and I owe him everything because I was getting my car repoed when I met him and I did what he told me and I recovered. He said, Mark, you could hand out 2-ply toilet paper, 1 square, to 30 people a day that simply said, in magic marker, get rich quick in my stupid pyramid scheme and your phone number. And if you handed it out to 30 people a day in a year, you'd be rich. And I remember saying to him, Richard, that's stupid. That's pushing the envelope. That won't work. Now I believe he was right. Because a certain number of people are going to go, oh my God. Nancy, you're not going to remember how we asked God this morning to give us unexpected income? Some guy just handed me some toilet paper and it said we could get rich. It's a sign.
Mm.
It's a numbers game. So I would say to people, make sure you pick a number, 10, 20, 30 people a day, 5 days a week. Put in, become the Tiger Woods of your company, 2 hours a day. That's all you got to do. But during those 2 hours, expose as many people as you can to the excitement of the industry without giving away the farm. And if you'll talk to 30 people a day in a year, you're at $100,000 a month. Here's what I've seen. I've seen comp plan after comp plan after comp plan, but I've never seen one that didn't pay $100,000 a month to people who talk to 30 people a day, 5 days a week.
Mm.
I've never seen one.
Mm.
The problem is the consistency of repetition of reaching large numbers of people.
Right.
So that's my great message. And here's the interesting thing, Eric. Once these actions occur over a reasonable period of time, they become habitual. And once they're habitual, they're routine. And resilience is a natural byproduct of habitual behavior.
Mm-hmm.
What most people don't do is execute that action step long enough to make the process habit forming. You know,
right.
Once it is, it's almost like putting butter on a slide. Going from action to attainment is a slide down. It's all downhill.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is making those actions a habit so that you can become resilient and do them long enough.
Right.
And anybody can, in my opinion.
Right. Well, Mark, I appreciate so much you taking the time for everybody to hear some of your wisdom. You've been around for a long time. You've been one of the heroes of the space and being generous enough to be accessible enough to all of these people who are watching, and I know that they appreciate it. Thank you very much
for
spending the time.
I appreciate you having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's what I would tell you. As always, if you liked what you heard, if you want to challenge it, have a discussion, whatever, please comment below this program. Be part of the discussion. Let's all talk about it together. And my greatest wish for all of you is that you decide to become a network marketing professional, that you decide to go pro. If you do, you can be the change, we can be the change that our great profession is waiting for. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. Sorry for the coughing during this program. I'm working on all that. But have a good time, have a great day, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.